Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Matt Harrison, is the author of our Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. This new devotional resource is available in print and as an ebook. Learn more about Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran?
They and others created a fraud in our country with this ridiculous witch hunt, where it was proven very strongly, no collusion, no obstruction, no nothing.
While the Mueller report said, according to the Mueller report,
was great. It could not have been better. It said, no obstruction, no collusion. It could not have been better.
We just haven't even seen the Mueller report, and we don't expect to accept just the Attorney General's interpretation of it. A little bit arrogant of him to think that that would be the case.
That's President Trump responding to reporters' questions about the Mueller report after its release to Attorney General Barr, and we await further information. Nancy Pelosi also responding and calling for the release of the entire report. What do we know about this report? What did Robert Mueller find after 2 years of investigating, at least initially, the allegations of collusion between President Trump, his people, and Russians? What role did the media play in the hype that surrounded the Mueller report for the last 2 years? What happens next? And in terms of the journalistic reputation, who are the big winners? Who are the big losers after all of this investigation and the release of the report? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, March 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be getting an update on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report and its release. Mark Hemingway will be joining us for the first hour. In hour two of Issues Etc., we'll go through some listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Then we're going to be joined by Bill McKeever, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry, to talk about a new Mormon temple being built in Rome, of all places. Mormon temples are not churches like we think of churches where Mormons would go to gather to worship. There's something else, and we'll find out what they are and why they are built where they're built with Bill McKeever in the last half hour of the program. Joining us for an update on the report of Special Counsel Robert Mueller investigating allegations of collusion between Donald Trump and Russians in the 2016 presidential election, Mark Hemingway. He's a regular guest, and he's a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
Your wife, Molly Hemingway of Fox News, has been saying for, I would say, the better part of the 2 years of the Mueller investigation that there would be no evidence found in the main part of the investigation of collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians during the 2016 presidential election. When the news hit on Friday afternoon, what was her reaction?
Well, I want to be careful. I think that as a careful journalist, I don't think she was saying there would be like no evidence found, but she was extremely skeptical at every step of the way that there was anything there. All of the things they kept pointing to that they said, well, you know, this is evidence of collusion, or there's got to be collusion right behind this door that this, you know, obscure fact is pointing to, you know, it just didn't add up. I mean, at every step of the way, people were so far ahead of what the facts actually said. It was just grossly irresponsible. And it's been, you know, I think gratifying for her, and rightly so, because basically the entire Beltway consensus was that there was something rotten in Denmark, as it were, with the Trump administration, and they had no evidence to base that on, at least in terms of the central claim of collusion. And my wife was one of very few journalists. I mean, you could probably count them on two hands that any sort of prominent perch that were constantly pushing back against this.
What was her reaction?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to say. Like, on one hand, it's very validating, but on the other hand, it's like, you know, what the heck took so long, right? I mean, there were so many massive journalistic errors along the way, and yet at never at any point was there any serious attempt to reform themselves or start to approach the story with more caution. Just like these people were incapable of learning. So even though that they've been exposed by, you know, putting all their eggs in the Mueller basket. There's no evidence I see whatsoever that these people are going to anyway reform themselves now they've utterly been shown to be wrong. Now, at the same time, they're going to have to reap the whirlwind from this. I mean, I do think that, you know, you've got a situation here that these people have created. And bear in mind, it's not just the Mueller report. I mean, it's the Kavanaugh hearings. It's the Trump election. It's there have been a whole bunch of massive, you know, news events in the past, you know, decade or more that have shown the media to be like hopelessly partisan and willing to believe and assiduously promote narratives that were just absolutely not true and were absolutely not true to any sort of, you know, half-brained observer who was paying attention to the actual facts. So, you know, they're going to have to deal with the fact that there's going to be a huge credibility issue for them going forward.
Since Friday's, at least the handing over the report to Attorney General Barr, what do we know so far?
Well, we know that Barr says that there's no more, according to the Mueller report, there's no more indictments pending for people caught up in the investigation. So that in and of itself is huge. And if there's no more indictments pending, that means that there is absolutely no indictments related to the central claim that Russia, that Donald Trump treasonously colluded with Russia to steal the 2016 election, which was the actual conclusion that was being promoted and relentlessly for the past 2 years. So, I mean, that in and of itself is huge. Now, Barr did include a line in his summary of the report, you know, quoting the report saying that this did not, that their report did not exonerate the Trump administration on the question of obstruction of justice. That's a very tricky thing to do there. Like, on one hand, if you're a prosecutor, your job is not to refuse to bring charges, but then go out there and say, oh, but there's all this really bad stuff out there that doesn't rise to the level of a crime, and this person should then be publicly shamed. I mean, that's sort of an abuse of power by the government, and it's kind of what people originally objected to with what James Comey did with Hillary Clinton. You know, either the woman was guilty of mishandling classified information or she was not. Don't say, you know, we're not going to charge her with a crime, but then go on this rant about what she did was really wrong. Do one or the other. I mean, I think it was a miscarriage on both fronts, which is to say that she probably was guilty of various crimes related to the handling of classified information, and at the same time, and as such, probably deserved the condemnation, but you don't get to have it both ways. I think Barr is being canny about this, which is to say that, you know, if there was no collusion, and it appears there was no collusion from the outset, and all of the effort that Mueller was engaged in over the last 2 years was all related to various process crimes and, you know, tangential things like Paul Manafort's dealing in the Ukraine. If collusion was never really on the table for their investigation, then what were they doing? Well, it seems like they were wrapping up a lot of people in this dragnet of a sprawling investigation and then trying to present a case for obstruction of justice to Congress, even if they couldn't make that case as a matter of actually bringing indictments. And that's a very sort of, again, sort of trying to have it both ways thing. It's not really what these people should be doing. They should not be gathering a bunch of evidence that doesn't rise to the level of a crime, but then presenting it in such a way that makes the subject look as bad as possible so that there are political consequences. That's a really sort of underhanded, un-American way, I think, to address these things.
What don't we know yet that we hope to learn from the Mueller report?
Well, there's lots we don't know. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, I will freely admit that what I just did was engaging in a bit of speculation there about what's going on with the Barr summary versus, you know, the actual Mueller report. So, you know, we need to actually know what it says about obstruction. It just says that they didn't exonerate Trump. It specifically says the report does not exonerate Trump on obstruction. But, you know, at the same time, it's very hard to bring obstruction of justice charges when there's no underlying crime. I mean, we're just going to have to see the case it actually makes there, you know, whether it is this, like, political case, you know, that it's being made to encourage impeachment. Because remember, Congress can impeach, the president at any time for any reason, and that's the way the Constitution is written. You know, whether it's making a political case to motivate Congress, you know, which is a very different thing than actually saying that there was a provable crime committed.
Take us back 2 years. How did the Mueller investigation get started? What were the initial allegations that were being investigated?
Well, it got started basically as a direct consequence of Trump firing Comey the way that he did. I think there was a strong case to make that you know, James Comey was incompetent, and that case has only been incredibly bolstered by everything Comey has done since his firing and, you know, his book tour and all the contradictory and ridiculous things he said. But, you know, Trump did it in such a way that it allowed a lot of people to speculate that Trump was doing it because he was trying to shut down any FBI investigation into him and his campaign and whether or not specifically there had been collusion and other things like that. You know, we now know from, like, leaked texts from the FBI agents, you know, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, who were having an affair, that they believed from the beginning that, you know, I think the quote was, there was no there there with regard to collusion. So the FBI didn't really think that there was a lot there. So there's a question of whether or not the FBI or quote-unquote deep state orchestrated this whole thing to sort of drag Trump through the mud, you know, and possibly, you know, turn up other crimes like obstruction of justice to go after him for, you know, basically exposing the FBI's corruption with, you know, FISA warrants and James Comey's, you know, duplicitous dealings with the president, you know, telling me he wasn't under investigation, you know, repeatedly in person, and then leaking all this stuff to the press that suggested that the FBI was going after him. So, you know, in one respect, you know, it was, you could look at it as the FBI doing this to sort of, like, you know, cover their tracks. You know, they wouldn't look like they were corrupt for investigating a using partisan opposition research to instigate an investigation into a presidential campaign, you know, in a way that is, you know, heavily politicized, that would make their entire organization look corrupt. So you can either look at it as, you know, there was serious evidence that this, you know, collusion and obstruction of justice and other crimes were happening, and that was the impetus for the investigation. Or you can also look at it through the lens of the FBI sort of, you know, trying to, you know, cover its own behind with some of the things that they had done that were, like, way over the line in terms of investigating the Trump administration while the election was still going on.
So how would you describe what has happened over the last 2 years?
Well, I don't know what to say other than that there has been a sort of collective mass hysteria. It really, truly has been a thing to behold. There was pretty, and what's interesting about it was, is usually these kinds of fringe conspiracy theories are very much sort of a product of, you know, the political extremes. But this was something that was, you know, the ball was picked up and run by centrist Washington. You know, I mean, primarily centrist, you know, Democrats were the big proponents of this. Although, you know, certainly there were a lot of, like, never Trump types who you might classify as being on the right that were, you know, into this, you know, lock, stock, and barrel as well. And, you know, these are people with, you know, real institutional clout. I mean, you know, you had the former John Brennan, the former head of the CIA, was on television, what, 2 weeks ago saying that, you know, Trump was going to be indicted. I mean, these people were out of control. And it was all simply because they could not deal with the fact that Donald Trump won a free and fair Democratic election. They just could not believe that this man who threatened the sort of existing order in this town, that, you know, might possibly do things that were so disruptive it might stop the, you know, huge money wheel in this town, you know, stop spinning for them. And they just, you know, lost their minds, be it because they were personally offended by Donald Trump's, you know, sort of, you know, vulgarian, you know, Queen's businessman sensibilities, or just that they didn't like the fact that, you know, the people in the hinterlands who were voting for him were, you know, letting their true feelings about what was going on in Washington be known. But either way, I mean, it showed a serious amount of disrespect and contempt for the democratic process, and I think that that is something we are going to be dealing with the consequences of for a very long time. I mean, these people tried to, you know, delegitimize a legitimately elected president of the United States, and maybe permanently sow doubt among a significant portion of the population about the legitimacy of our democratic elections. I mean, this is a huge deal.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years. We're getting an update on Robert Mueller's report. Stay tuned.
When God decided to love you, he wasn't content to sort of love you at a distance. He wanted to get up close when that happened, which is why Christ took on human flesh.
Pastor Hans Feeney of Lutheran Satire talking about his presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
But even after Christ ascended to the right hand of the Father, God still wanted to dwell with you through the flesh and blood of his Son. He wanted to be physically present and in the room when he covered you in forgiveness and life and salvation. So that's why he's given his church the Lord's Supper, and that's why we should rejoice every time God comes into the room and invites us to feast on the same flesh and the same blood that won our salvation at Calvary.
You can meet and hear Pastor Hans Feeney making the case for the Lord's Supper at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
The living God is now defined by the living and risen Christ.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Do not fall away from the true God who died and rose again and lives for you.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
We're getting an update on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on allegations of collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians in the 2016 presidential election. Mark Hemingway is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon. Mark, what role did the media play over the last 2 years?
The media were an utter abomination. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, if you look at the massive media errors that have occurred under Donald Trump, and they all run in one direction, they all run against Trump and are designed to make him look bad, it's just absolutely appalling. And not just that, a big part of this story was that these people were willingly letting themselves be manipulated by the intelligence community, and, you know, former Obama administration officials who were, like, orchestrating this campaign to try and overturn the 2016 election and delegitimize Donald Trump as soon as he took office. I mean, they had, like, you know, an organized opposition in a war room, and they had PR firms like Fusion GPS and other things that were feeding these narratives constantly to the media, who were just lapping them up without asking any questions. I mean, a good example, I mean, this whole thing got started sort of in the media in January of 2017, right before Trump was inaugurated, when CNN ran the first big story that caused everyone to pay attention to the so-called dossier that was, you know, we didn't know at the time, but we know now was you know, funded and created by the Democratic Party. So this was, you know, opposition research. We also know that the dossier itself is full, just chock full of falsehoods and untrue things. Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney, just testified under oath a few weeks ago that he was never in Prague making, you know, dealings with shady figures, as was, you know, asserted in the dossier. So when CNN first reported that story that the president and Barack Obama had been, you know, briefed on this, you know, dossier of stuff that Russian intelligence and everyone, you know, knew about Donald Trump's shady dealings, I mean, it was this really, like, you know, frightening thing for a lot of people that, you know, the Russians may have had all this blackmail dirt and whatever else on the President of the United States. And it just exploded the whole Russian narrative. Well, we now know that, you know, one of the main sources for CNN's story there was James Clapper, I mean, the former director of national intelligence under the Obama administration. And Clapper is a guy that has a reputation for dishonesty, and you know, he's been previously busted for lying to Congress directly. To say that, like, this should have been something that set off alarm bells for people at CNN is an understatement. I mean, Carl Bernstein was one of the four bylines on that story. I mean, talk about, you know, irony there. You know, when these people were just totally and uncritically accepting these things that were being packaged and spoon-fed to them so that they would push these narratives that delegitimize Donald Trump. And it's, you know, any time the media stops being adversarial and start publishing whatever, you know, nonsense is being fed to them from from malefactors in the government, much less, you know, the liberal media taking their cues from the CIA and the intelligence apparatus in this country. I mean, that's just atrocious. And it doesn't serve them well. It doesn't serve the American people well. And it totally undermines trust in our government. And, you know, frankly, it should.
How is the report? It's been 5 days. How is it being spun currently by the collusion true believers in Washington?
Well, so it's kind of interesting. I mean, there really was kind of a resistance incorporated gold rush the past couple of years. I mean, there are these massive podcasts and newsletters, and there were people on cable news like Rachel Maddow that basically like staked their entire careers on pounding this night after night after night. And, you know, it's safe to say that these people are like just clinging to any life raft that they can find and are engaged in you know, huge amounts of denial. There's a popular podcast called Mueller, she wrote, and I just listened to their latest podcast on a lark last night. And I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, these people are just sort of living in an alternate reality. They're citing tweets from well-known conspiracy theorists on Twitter. They are parsing any little thing that they can to try and ignore that the central claim that, you know, we now know that Mueller said that there's definitively no collusion means it's not the end, and that, you know, the political outcome they had hoped for, which is impeachment, isn't going to happen. I just don't know what to tell you. I mean, the ratings for Maddow are apparently, you know, really down, although it's, you know, really early. But apparently she was, like, down 500,000 viewers, which in terms of cable news audiences is huge. So, you know, we'll see in the long term. But, you know, I'm very skeptical that anyone's going to learn any lessons here from what happened. And there's going to be, you know, any significant punishment for these people.
It is remarkable to observe how quickly history gets rewritten, and social media does often leave a paper trail, or at least a data trail, for what people have claimed in the past. For the last 2 years, Mueller has been kind of the hopeful savior hero of the collusion true believers. Do you think it's possible that at some point here in the next couple of days or weeks, they'll simply turn on him and say he was part of the problem?
Well, they've already sort of turned on Rod Rosenstein, the guy who, you know, authorized the special counsel to begin with and has, you know, tried to undermine Trump, you know, multiple times. I don't think they're necessarily going to turn on Mueller just yet, because we don't know what Mueller actually said in the report. You know, if what I suspect is true, and the reason why Barr is handling it the way he's handling it, is that Mueller knew there wasn't any crime, but tried to conduct an investigation in such a way that, you know, chronicled obstruction of justice, despite there not being an underlying crime to obstruct, you know, and we find out more details about the report that seem to validate that narrative, then people might very much, you know, still uphold him as sort of this, you know, American hero. It's entirely possible, though, that Mueller was, you know, off on his own weird little trip and, you know, in the end decided to do the right thing. I mean, I don't want to speculate too much, but, you know, we just don't know. Without knowing the specific contents of the report, and I suspect either through congressional testimony, subpoenas, you know, Democrats are really going to demand a lot here. We'll find out more one way or the other. But the question is how much political appetite remains if there's no underlying crime of collusion for Democrats to pursue this? Pretty soon they're going to want to pivot to 2020, and I don't think that they're going to want to have this, you know, Mueller, you know, trying to impeach Trump thing hanging over their head. Before the Mueller report even came out, Nancy Pelosi was very publicly trying to move on past impeachment and saying it wasn't helpful. I mean, they've looked at the polling on this, and they know it's not helpful to look like they're obsessed conspiracy mongers at this point in time.
At the same time, the president has been extremely publicly critical of Mueller and the potential of the report. And have you detected in him a change in tone toward the special prosecutor?
No, not really. But I mean, I do think it is worth saying was that throughout this entire 2 years, there was a constant refrain and constant leaks coming from unnamed anonymous sources saying that Trump was going to fire Mueller and that, you know, the special counsel investigation had to be protected. And the White House was clearly, like, doing everything they can to, even if they couldn't prove obstruction, to you know, throw a wrench in the works of Mueller's investigation. Well, guess what? The Mueller investigation's over. We now know that they cooperated extensively with Mueller. They didn't shut down the special counsel at any step, and all of the things they said that Trump was going to do and demanding that, you know, Congress pass laws protecting the Mueller investigation, it was all for naught. I mean, the fact of the matter is no one can really say that the Trump administration did anything to impede Mueller from doing his work. So it's over. Trump didn't interfere with it. At some point, they have to, you know, either accept the legitimacy of this or be seen as illegitimate themselves.
How have the 2020 Democratic presidential candidates that have announced so far responded to the Mueller report?
You know, that's a good question. To be honest, they're following the typical Democratic line in this, which is to say that they are expressing some skepticism, but not so much as to look crazy, and demanding the full release of the report, which is kind of the standard congressional Democratic response. But, you know, I haven't seen any of them, like, you know, like I said, double down big time on, you know, impeachment or anything like that, you know, after the report coming out, simply because they, you know that the American people are not obsessed with this. In a few months, they're going to have to be winning over moderate Democratic voters in New Hampshire and Iowa. And I don't think that those kinds of people, as opposed to the crazy left-wing party activists, I don't think the regular voters are going to have the appetite for that sort of, you know, fringe debate. They'd much rather talk about health care and other issues that are, you know, important to voters.
We're talking with Mark Hemingway, a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years, about the Mueller report. I chafe at authority, whether at home, in government, or in church. I complain incessantly about elected leaders and rarely pray for them. I whine and complain about it and express hatred and ill will instead of doing what the blessed apostles did. They left the presence of the council rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer dishonor for the name of Jesus. O Lord, have mercy. Just a little bit from the pen of Pastor Matt Harrison, the author of our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. Find out more about this devotional resource at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House. Ask for the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for March. It's available as both an ebook and in print. Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. When we come back, we'll talk with Mark Hemingway about the criminal charges that did come out of the Mueller investigation.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Matt Harrison, is the author of our Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. This new devotional resource is available in print and as an ebook. Learn more about Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month. Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran?
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Mount Olive Lutheran, Madison, Wisconsin, St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada, Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska, Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas, Gloria Day Lutheran, Davie, Florida, St. Paul Lutheran, Wildwood, Missouri, Redeemer Lutheran, St. Cloud, Minnesota, Concordia Lutheran, Geneseo, Illinois, Holy Cross Lutheran, Rockland, California, and Emmanuel Lutheran, Appleton, Minnesota. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. We're talking with Washington, D.C. journalist Mark Hemingway about the report of Special Counsel Robert Mueller on alleged collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians during the 2016 presidential election. Mark, tell us about the criminal charges that did come out of the Mueller investigation.
There was obviously a number of criminal charges brought against Manafort. Paul Manafort, who was his campaign manager briefly during the election, but they were all owing to lobbying work that Manafort had done in the Ukraine, you know, years prior to his involvement on the campaign. And the thing is, and you know, you can, this is a judgment, you can judge Trump for this one way or the other, but the fact of the matter is that Paul Manafort's being a bit shady in terms of his dealings and other things were... those things were well known, that, you know, he had done some shady lobbying work for bad people long before he joined the Trump campaign. So, you know, no one was particularly surprised by that. He also brought a bunch of indictments against a bunch of Russian nationals related to hacking and stuff during the election. But, you know, that was, again, not part of any sort of case that these people were working with the Trump campaign. They were just, you know, Russians doing the typical disruptive, you know, information campaigns that bad actors like Russia do. So, you know, that pretty much, you know, sums it up. There was some other stuff, you know, George Papadopoulos got caught up in I think lying to investigators, who was a Trump aide, a foreign policy aide during the campaign. Although Papadopoulos has just written a book and you know, is saying that, you know, he never lied to investigators, you know, when he had to just take a plea deal for, you know, a million different reasons. I don't know whether to evaluate the veracity of that, you know, one way or the other, except to say that Papadopoulos' crimes have been greatly exaggerated in the press in terms of, you know, the things that he supposedly said to the Australian ambassador that kicked off the FBI's whole interest in the investigating the Trump campaign, allegedly. Again, it's a bunch of tangential process crime stuff or stuff related to Russia that has nothing to do with the Trump campaign. None of this has to do with collusion.
So just to be very careful about this, the Russian nationals, and I think the majority of the people who were indicted after the investigation were actually Russian nationals who will never answer for those charges in any way.
Correct.
We can't touch them. That in no way implies that they were in any way connected to or involved with President Trump.
Yes, and it's no one is debating whether or not Russia tried to do things to interfere with the 2016 election. You know, clearly they were on Twitter and social media spreading, you know, bad messages. But, you know, at the same time, we also need to bear in mind that there's not a single ounce of evidence that, you know, Russians buying a handful of misleading Facebook ads changed one single vote in this country. So let's not get out over our skis here and let, you know, the Russians live rent-free in our heads about what they did.
To your way of thinking, in this technological age, is there any way to stop foreign powers from interfering with American elections?
I mean, if you define social media campaigns and bots and stuff as interfering in an election, well, probably no good way to stop that. I think we should be much more focused on, you know, things where, like, you know, cyber crimes and stuff like that, where, you know, they say looking at whether or not they're interfering with voting machines and that sort of stuff, securing our elections that way. And I think that there's actually some partisan agreement on that, thankfully. But no, in terms of disinformation campaigns, well, no, it's very hard to sort of stop that thing in an age of social media. We as Americans would say, well, we're not engaging quote-unquote disinformation the way that, say, bad actors like Russia might, But, you know, we certainly try and inject information into elections in places where we want a more favorable outcome, or we think that we can at least morally argue that one leader would be better for the people over the other. So, you know, every major power engages in this behavior to some degree or the other. The question is how morally, I guess, that they do it. At the same time, part of the reason why America has been so immune from this sort of thing, unlike other countries, is that we actually had a high degree of confidence in our own institutions and in our own political process. So, you know, we would dismiss these kinds of stuff out of hand, or it was relegated to the fringes. Unfortunately, I think because Democrats decided to make this an issue for their own partisan political concerns, and their friends in the media backed them up on it, we now are in a situation here where it's become harder and harder to have that same sort of cultural confidence and, you know, unity of faith in the process. And we need to understand that that was Russia's goal all along. The disinformation campaigns are a sledgehammer, not a scalpel. I mean, like, Russia could not wade into the election with any degree of certainty and pretend that they were going to put Donald Trump in the presidency, which is kind of what's been alleged all along. The goal all along was just to sow discord among the populace and in our political process and undermine faith in, you know, how we conduct our elections. And if that was the goal, well, then, you know, mission accomplished. And we need to recognize that that's a huge problem. Step back, try and find common cause with people we disagree with politically, and start to agree that the political process is sacred, and we cannot engage in wildly irresponsible speculation over a period of 2 years that calls that entire process into question the way that we did with Donald Trump.
What other investigations are still underway in the Southern District of New York and by other state attorneys general?
Well, you know, I don't know about other state attorney general off the top of my head, although I'm sure that, you know, they may even be providing resources with the SDNY in New York, I should say, New York's attorney general. But the SDNY primarily is handling this issue of the hush money payments to the porn star Stormy Daniels that Trump paid off. There is a case being made that Trump paying off Stormy Daniels during the election amounts to a campaign finance violation. Now, I don't know quite what to make of this. They tried to make a very similar case and failed against John Edwards for making, you know, payments to his mistress during the 2008 election, and that actually lost in court. You know, he argued that he was trying to pay off his mistress to hide his crimes from his wife, and, you know, it was, which is a fairly plausible thing to say, and he wasn't actually trying to do this to gain electoral benefit, even if the two things were related. So, you know, proving motive and other things here is very tricky. And, you know, that will be a difficult thing to do. Never mind that, you know, $100,000 campaign finance violation. I mean, Barack Obama, at the end of his election, at the end of his campaign in 2008, turned off the credit card authentication aspect of his, like, the things that took the donations on his web campaign website, and may have done so quite deliberately, and took in all manner of donations from foreign nationals for his campaign. It was a massive, massive FEC violation, and he got, like, a slap on the wrist, and no one even cared, and it was for a lot more money than was used to pay off Stormy Daniels. So the idea that because Trump committed a minor FEC violation, that this is going to be some sort of impeachable offense is going to be, you know, a really tough thing to sell. The fact that Donald Trump is, you know, a guy who likes to do improper things with women, you know, was not news to the American public when they voted for him. So I just don't see it raises to the level of the kind of, you know, impeachment-worthy scandal. You know, we can discuss whether or not the debasement of our expectations for politicians is bad for this country, but, you know, at this point in time, it's very hard to make the case that that's sort of an impeachable offense. Now, at the same time, I do think the state attorney general of New York is also doing a bunch of, you know, I don't know, it's basically, I don't want to say that there's nothing there, but it looks on the face of it to be a fishing expedition into, you know, crimes by the Trump organization going back decades. I don't know if there's any there, but, you know, I haven't heard a lot about it since, and I don't know whether going through bad business dealings of Trump, which again were the fact that Trump is engaged in some shady business practices, was not unknown to the American public when they voted for him, is also going to rise to the level of something the Democrats are wanting to spend the political capital involved to impeach him over.
You have been engaged for the last 2 years in a lot of media criticism, simply watching what the media is doing and on this and other issues and commenting on it publicly. To your mind, how much of the motivation of the media has been simply trying to explain how Hillary Clinton could possibly lose a presidential election? She lost one to, or at least a primary, to Barack Obama before, but this time she was going up against Donald Trump. How much of their motivation was simply trying to explain that or explain that away?
I mean, I think that's about a third of it. That's about a third of it is trying to explain why Hillary Clinton lost the election. A third of it is simply because they are hopelessly partisan, which is to say that you have to remember how the media handled Donald Trump. When he entered the race, they gave him, like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in free publicity at a time when he was barely polling among the Republican base. They completely elevated him in terms of publicity and everything else. And a lot of journalists openly said that they were, you know, hoping that Donald Trump would get the nomination and taking him seriously because they thought that once a clown like Donald Trump became the Republican nominee, he would be easy to beat in the fall, and it would be utterly discrediting to the Republican Party that he was their nominee. They said that. Well, you know, they created a monster, and they ended up electing Donald Trump president in a roundabout sort of way, even though they were hard on him, you know, later in the campaign. So that's about a third of what's going on there, is they're smarting from that, you know, move that they pulled. And then the remaining third is simply that they are trying to recover their credibility. They told everyone that Donald Trump was a clown and couldn't get elected, and when he did, it showed that the media just, by and large, didn't know what they were talking about, and they spoke with such certainty about so many things during 2016, and they were already in a business climate where the media landscape is fracturing and people aren't paying for news and all sorts of other things, and they feel very directly threatened in terms of their livelihood. So they knew that a huge blow to their credibility, which is what happened when Donald Trump got elected, was something that had to be explained away so that people didn't doubt them when they tried to tell them, like, you know, what was going to happen in an election, or they tried to, you know, set these, you know, narratives. So, you know, it's a combination of things, but I think that those are the three big things for what, you know, motivated the media to behave the way they did in the last 2 years.
Should the entire report be released to the public?
You know, I'm a journalist, so I'm a fan of transparency. I honestly think that at this point in time, if the Mueller report is released and it makes this, you know, largely political case for obstruction, as I have suggested, then that is going to cause more problems than it creates, than it solves for the left and congressional Democrats. You know, there are going to be people pouring through this and spinning off more fringe conspiracy theories for every little thing that, you know, Mueller says that points to bad actions by Trump. And like I said, you know, even before the Mueller report came out, Nancy Pelosi was trying to pivot away from this. The American people don't want to go through more years of this, especially if the central underlying crime, the one thing that the media was obsessing on over 2 years, has definitively said not to be true. They're not going to have the appetite to follow through with any sort of, you know, politically slanted process crimes and try and use that as a way to leverage public opinion into impeachment. That's just such a weird thing to focus on and a difficult case to make to the public.
10 more minutes on the other side of the break with Mark Hemingway, Washington, D.C. journalist, talking about the Mueller report. Then in hour two, we'll go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. And Bill McKeever will tell us about a Mormon temple being built in Rome. If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again. This glorious good news is and always has been too good not to share. It compelled Peter, Paul, and the other apostles to the very ends of the earth, and it continues to drive Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionaries even today. Learn more here in the April issue of The Lutheran Witness magazine. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine this. What if you planned your vacation? You picked the location based upon where you knew there was a good Lutheran church. Well, we're here to let you know that if you're planning a Southern Oregon vacation, whether you visit Crater Lake, raft the Rogue, fish for salmon, or head down to the Redwoods, there's still a place for you to receive forgiveness. Faith Lutheran Church in Rogue River, Oregon. What's a vacation without the gospel? Faith Lutheran Church, Sundays at 10 a.m. Visit faithrogueriver.org.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran liberal arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Mueller Report with Mark Hemingway, a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years. Speaking of journalists, Ross Douthat of the New York Times will be making the case why the public square needs Christianity at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Douthat will be joined by Matt Harrison, Wesley Smith, Hans Feeney, Aaron Wolf, and Will Whedon. Early bird registration fee of $115 ends Sunday, March 31st. That's coming up this Sunday. Attendance is limited to 500. Thanks to Lutheran Church Extension Fund sponsorship, child care is free. You can register by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it along with the downloadable registration form at issuesetc.org to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also register online. The one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. So, Mark, in terms of the process of rolling out the report for public consumption, what happens next?
I don't honestly know. I mean, I think the bar has promised more information is going to come out here in the next few weeks, and I don't know, Congress will be brief one or the other. I mean, one way or the other, Congress is going to demand basically the full amount of information, and once they do, it will start leaking. I mean, if they have to subpoena Bob Mueller, they will. I don't know. It may even get leaked to them the way that the quote-unquote deep state works. I just don't know what's going to happen. I do think it is important to note that I don't think that Bob Barr is necessarily playing games here with what he's doing. You have to remember that these kinds of investigations are, you know, they're kind of like a prosecutor's notebook in a way, which is to say that when the cops investigate a crime and they don't charge someone with a crime, it would be considered outrageous for them to, like, just release the police report to the public that might have all manner of damning information about the person, you know, unrelated to the crime or otherwise. That's just not how things should work in a country where, you know, you have a presumption of innocence as a constitutional right. I mean, that would be, you know, a way to sort of slime people. And there's still a people that think, for instance, that the Starr report should have never been released. You know, there's an argument to be made that in the case of, say, presidents of the United States, full amounts of information are necessary to reassure the public and, you know, again, restore faith in democracy. And I think that's the best argument for releasing the report, and I'd be fine if they did. But at the same time, we should be cautious about just, you know, putting all the damaging information out there or stuff that looks damaging that they can't prove, more likely, that might be contained in this report. Like I said, Ken Starr's team had a big internal debate about whether or not they should even release the full report, or they should release a summary, or do something of that nature because of all the ugly sexual details and everything that were involved in that report. Star eventually made the final call to release it. It's notable that the guy internally and on Star's team that didn't want to release it publicly was one Brett Kavanaugh, who's now a Supreme Court Justice. But I think it's important to note that, like, this is a legitimate debate to have whether or not these kinds of reports should be public. So you should keep that in mind before we, you know, rush to judgment that Barr is playing games. But, you know, it might also simply be that Barr recognizes that Mueller himself is playing games. He's trying to get out ahead of that by focusing on the most valid claims in the report, which is that there's no collusion, before we delve into all the, you know, ridiculous intricacies of whether or not there was obstruction of justice for a underlying crime that didn't exist.
Regarding the reputation of the press, who would you say off the top of your head are the biggest losers and the biggest winners?
I mean, the absolute biggest loser to my mind is CNN. I mean, that network played a huge role in launching this whole narrative mainstream, and on top of that, went through just a series of just, you know, stepping on rakes of reporting stuff that had to be walked back. And they fired three journalists at one point over a story implying that Anthony Scaramucci had done something wrong. They reported for days that when Trump said that Comey had told him three times he wasn't under investigation, that Trump was lying, and they had sources saying that he was lying. Then, like, a couple days later, Comey testified before Congress that that was absolutely true. Then they had this huge story that Donald Trump Jr. had been apprised of the WikiLeaks emails that were hacked from the DNC ahead of the public, implying that he had some sort of back channel to WikiLeaks, which people say is tied to Russian intelligence. It appears that they've been spoon-fed this report from Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the Intel Committee, and they had gotten the date wrong on the report, and CNN, like, didn't even retract the story. They just, like, rewrote it in such a comical way that it didn't make sense. I mean, they just went on and on, and then they, you know, they played up this, you know, nightly. And unlike MSNBC, which went completely over the top in the Russia collusion, CNN's brand is, you know, the most trusted name in news. They are, you know, supposed to be the centrist thing that, you know, the one cable news network that you can safely play in an airport bar and, you know, people of all political persuasions aren't going to, you know, riot over it. And yet they went completely in the tank for this conspiracy, and it's just devastating. But there are so many major media malefactors. I mean, there are a number of specific reporters like Ken Delaney and NBC News that appear to be getting like half his scoops directly from Fusion GPS, the PR firm behind the dossier. Natasha Bertrand of The Atlantic was like all in on this conspiracy stuff. You know, you could just go on down the line. I mean, the New York Times and Washington Post both won Pulitzers for their Russia collusion coverage. And yeah, maybe not any one story was rife with, you know, blatant falsehoods, but over time, what you're looking at here is a bunch of cherry-picked facts that were presented in such a fashion as to present a grossly misleading picture in aggregate, and they won awards for this. I mean, it's really damning. I mean, I don't think there's much in the mainstream media that wasn't touched by being discredited by this scandal. All the major networks, I mean, all the major newspapers, for the most part, you know, played a role in this, and there should be accountability. People should be fired. And there should be a major upheaval in the industry because of this, but it's not going to happen. They just won't admit it.
Who are the biggest winners in terms of the reputation of the press?
Certainly my wife was out there appropriately expressing skepticism at every turn and, you know, suffering a lot of slings and arrows from people for doing so. There was some fantastic reporting the Daily Caller. Daily Caller's reporter named Chuck Ross, who was just incredibly dogged, broke all kinds of news related to the Trump-Russia stuff that, you know, holds up spectacularly well. Byron York of the Washington Examiner was another guy who was very early on was doing very careful, measured analysis at every point, showing that the facts in these reports and what congressional Democrats were saying about collusion, et cetera, were not adding up. There's a few other people, you know, there. Glenn Greenwald is this crazy leftist who shares a whole number of opinions that I do not agree with and I do not like and all kinds of other things. But, you know, he from the get-go, he's the executive editor of this publication called The Intercept, I think. And he from the very get-go was a prominent voice on the left saying, you know, you people are crazy, you're wrong to be not skeptical of the intelligence agencies and things like that. And he deserves kudos for staking his own reputation on that.
Finally, how does this affect the 2020 presidential election?
Well, certainly it clears the decks for, you know, Trump to not have a cloud of scandal hanging over, which in and of itself is huge. You know, even if the investigation were still ongoing in the next year, Democrats, I'm sure, would be using that to their political advantage, you know, and implying there's all sorts of bad news to come out. Now, Donald Trump has always thrived as being this guy who's against institutional Washington. He now gets to go to the people that elected them that are already skeptical of these institutional powers and how they're, you know, oppressing them in their own lives and say, look, these people tried to take me down and I fought them and I won and I will be your champion. And that will be a powerful theme for him. I mean, it was very much a theme for him in 2016. And I think that he's going to, you know, make a lot of hay out of that. And not just that, I imagine a lot of these Democratic candidates were on record saying outlandish things about the Trump-Russia collusion stuff, and, you know, he'll be able to, you know, trot that out and point out that they were wrong about these things. In general, he will look like a fighter and a survivor, which is very much the sort of scrappy image that, that Trump voters, you know, like. So, and it definitely benefits him politically.
Mark Hemingway is a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years. You can follow him on Twitter at Heminator. That's at H-E-M-I-N-A-T-O-R. Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to open up the mailbag, go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Then we'll talk with Bill McKeever, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, about a new Mormon temple in Rome. That email address, in case you want to contact us anytime, talkback@issuesetc.org. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. We'll respond to some of that after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service, every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.